Sask Ag Today with Doug Faulkner.
Good afternoon and welcome to Sask Ag Today. Coming up on today's program, the Food, Fuel, and Fertilizer Global Summit is underway in Regina. We'll hear from the Saskatchewan Chamber of Commerce CEO, Prabha Ramaswamy, who will talk about some of the events planned for the next 2 days. We will also hear part of the speech from Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe, who was one of the first people to appear at the Food, Fuel, and Fertilizer Global Summit this morning in Regina. Spring rains fell in many parts of Saskatchewan last week, and that was the first topic of discussion on Friday's SaskAgToday.com roundtable with Chief Agricultural Editor Kevin Hirsch. He touched on a number of other subjects as well. We'll have that for you. And a prairie-wide fusarium head blight risk map is being developed by a partnership consisting of provincial governments, farm groups, and the University of Manitoba. We'll hear from Paul Bullock, who is a senior scholar with the Department of Soil Science at the University of Manitoba, about that. So all of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of Sask Ag Today. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers bio-meal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. It's also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist. Welcome back to Sask Ag Today. It's all about the food, fuel, and fertilizer for the next 2 days, as the Food, Fuel, and Fertilizer Global Summit is in Regina today and tomorrow. The Saskatchewan Chamber of Commerce has been busy organizing the event that will be held at the Delta Hotel. Chamber CEO Prabha Ramaswamy says the list of people attending are former leaders, heads of major resource companies, and government officials.
We have some world-class speakers. It includes Honorable Scott Moe, the Premier of Saskatchewan, the Right Honorable Stephen Harper, former Prime Minister of Canada, the Honorable Brad Wall, former Premier of Saskatchewan. The event also features a stellar lineup of dignitaries and business leaders from across the globe, including the Honorable David Wilkins, former U.S. Ambassador to Canada, Bruce Bodine, President and CEO of the Mosaic Company, Tim Gitzel, President and CEO of Chemical Corporation, Murad Al-Khatib, President and CEO of AGT Foods and Ingredients. And we have many more panelists and moderators who are business leaders, but I just identified a few.
She says getting a chance to network with the participants is just one component of the summit.
That's one part of it, Ryan. And the other part is really to showcase what we have that the world needs. And we're talking about food, fuel, and fertilizer. Saskatchewan is one of the largest agri-food exporters in Canada. I mean, we have 40% of cropland here in our province, 40% of cropland in Canada. We are a leading global producer of uranium and potash. And so I think it's important to understand that Saskatchewan has a leading and vital role to play in feeding the world, in global food security, and in energy transition because as I said, we're a leading producer of uranium, and nuclear is now at the forefront of energy transition, and therefore, so is Saskatchewan.
Ramaswamy explains the inspiration behind the summit.
Absolutely. I think it's about telling Saskatchewan's story, but it's not just Saskatchewan's story. It's the story of businesses in our province. It's the story of our business community as well. Because it's these businesses that fuel economic growth, drive economic growth in this province. And it was important for us to tell this story because it's, you know, our province is really poised to position Canada as a global leader with the resources and the advantages we have here.
She says it wasn't easy to line up so many keynote speakers for the summit.
It did not. It took many, many months to get the stellar lineup. And the Saskatchewan Chamber of Commerce is extremely grateful to all of these speakers who agreed to participate in this global summit this year. We were very, very pleased and honored that they said yes to our request. And, you know, we, again, are feeling very fortunate to be able to host the summit right here in our province of Saskatchewan.
Throughout the 2 days, there are speeches and panel discussions on global food security, market trends, meeting the demands of a growing population, and Saskatchewan's energy transition.
GX94, AgriView.
Leaders in Canada's grain industry are praising the Canadian Food Inspection Agency for confirming gene-edited crops are safe to use as livestock feed. The Canola Council of Canada, the Canada Grains Council, and Cereals Canada have applauded the CFIA for its new guidance on gene editing. The decision will help clear the way for public and private plant breeders to use gene editing in their crop and trait development programs. Genome editing, or gene editing, involves changing the genetic code of a plant with technology such as CRISPR-Cas9, a technique used to cut sections of DNA. It allows scientists to precisely change a plant's DNA to achieve desired traits, such as improved disease resistance or healthier oils in the kernel. The federal government is expanding its surveillance program for a form of avian flu amid a growing outbreak in U.S. dairy cattle. Fragments of highly pathogenic avian influenza have been detected in pasteurized milk sold in the U.S., and a statement from Canada's health agencies says lactating dairy cattle being imported from the United States will now require negative tests. The statement says officials will be conducting enhanced testing of milk at the retail level to look for viral fragments. It says voluntary testing will also be available for cows that are not presenting with clinical signs of avian flu as part of enhanced industry biosecurity efforts. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration said last week about 20% of milk samples from across the country tested positive for fragments of avian flu. CN and CPKC Rail supplied a combined 80% of hopper cars ordered in Grain Week 39, a modest decline from the prior week. In supplying 68% of cars ordered by shippers in Week 39, CN saw performance decline notably from the 80% order fulfillment performance seen in Week 38, and once again falling below the 80% performance threshold. CN performance remains below the 90% performance threshold for the 17th consecutive week. CPKC performance improved significantly, with the railway supplying 92% of shipper orders in Week 39, an improvement from the 82% order fulfillment performance seen in Week 38, and the best performance seen from CPKC in 4 months. It's also the first time in 4 months that CPKC has seen performance meet or exceed the 90% threshold. There's no shortage of demand for Canadian beef in South Korea, but the country's import tariff regime is making it difficult for Canadian beef to compete with meat from the U.S. and Australia. That's according to the president of the Canadian Cattle Association. Nathan Finney and other representatives from the CCA and Canada Beef were in South Korea recently, accompanying Canada's Trade Minister, Mary Ng, on a trade mission. The Canadian industry got a taste of what market access to South Korea could look like during the COVID pandemic, when import tariffs were dropped to zero for food security reasons, and Canadian shipments rose 165% during that short period. Acknowledging the bilateral trade agreement signed by the Canadian government in 2014 remains in place, Finney says the CCA will continue work on having import tariffs reduced to match the U.S. and level the playing field on exports to the major Indo-Pacific market. U.S. agriculture companies have been brisk importers of Russian fertilizer since the 2022 Ukraine invasion, a practice that is unwittingly helping fund Russia's war against Ukraine. The U.S. does not impose sanctions directly on Russian fertilizer, which is important to global food supplies and prices. Last Wednesday, the U.S. Treasury Department issued hundreds of fresh sanctions on other Russian targets over the war. the biggest U.S. urea importers from Russia since its invasion of Ukraine in February 2022 to March 2024 are Eco Fertilizers, Swiss-based Eurochem, and U.S. grain handling giant Archer Daniels Midland, according to U.S. import data provided to Reuters by Import Yeti, a company that provides information about suppliers by tracking bills of lading. Eco Fertilizers, the company Russian fertilizer producer Akron Group uses to import into the U.S., imported about 575 million metric tons during the period. And SaskAg Today is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose SaskAg Today. And yes, it is free. And that's the Ag Review portion of our program. Please stay tuned. SaskAg Today will return right after these messages. Welcome back to SaskAg Today. I'm Doug Falconer. It's overcast and 16 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. Premier Scott Moe told delegates at the Food, Fuel, and Fertilizer Global Summit today that Saskatchewan has everything the world needs, food, fuel, and fertilizer. Moe delivered a speech to kick off the two-day conference in Regina. He talked about how important access to international markets is.
We have all of the elements that can provide the world with food security and energy security, and that's top of mind today. I would say it's a more important discussion globally today than it has been in a number of decades. And we know that those connections into those 163 countries and even beyond that, they require a personal connection. They require the opportunity to build relationships. You can't do it from a Zoom account in your basement. You need to be in market. And that's why we are in those markets, and that's why we have opened 9 international trade offices around the globe to represent the companies, the industries that Saskatchewan people are employed in globally, to represent our interests in those 163 countries around the world, but more specifically in countries of interest. We have China, India, Japan, Singapore, Mexico, Vietnam, United Arab Emirates, and the United Kingdom, as well as an office recently opened in Germany. It's those very investments that I talked about earlier where Canada is leading the nation. It's those relationships, those are certainly starting to pay off, not only in capital investment that is arriving in our communities, but in our export value. And our export value matters. It's the very source of the wealth in our communities. It's the very source of the wealth in our province. And our export value this year is the second highest ever, only to last year. And it would have been higher had we not experienced a Port of Vancouver strike for a number of weeks this year, which did impact and does impact the bottom line when it comes to the export value in Saskatchewan. Among Canadian provinces, as I said, we are not only the top province in attracting capital investment, private sector capital investment into our province, but we are the top per capita exporter as well. More than double the national average when it comes to value of product exported per person that lives here. Our total agricultural exports just this past year were over $20 billion. If you go back to 2007, our entire export package was about $16 billion. All of our exports were less than what we exported in agricultural products just this past year. That doesn't mean we're necessarily exporting more agricultural products, we are, but we're exporting a higher value product today than we were certainly in 2007. Agri-food exports to India, a market of importance, the third largest economy in the world, very shortly, if not today, is one of the largest populated country in the world. Our exports to India have increased by 70% this past year. I might remind you, this past year has been a time where Indo-Canadian relations have been somewhat challenged. Of all Canadian exports to India, and there's about $8 billion in two-way trade that flows in and out of India from Canada. But of all of the exports that go into India, 40% are coming from this province. 40% of Indian exports from Canada are coming from the province of Saskatchewan. Now, that is up 70% in the last 12 months in a time where, as I said, the Indo-Canadian relationship has seen some challenges. Last week, the Saskatchewan India Trade Office Commissioner was reinstated. This is a significant announcement in not only the country of India, but I would say most certainly in the country of Canada. But our provincial trade commissioner was reinstated with full diplomatic status. We're the only province to enjoy that relationship, and we appreciate the decision by the Indian government to allow our trade commissioner to resume his duties back in New Delhi, back in the country of India with full diplomatic status. Again, the only province in Canada to have that occur. We have value-added exports to Vietnam, generally a nation that we have not done a lot of business in. This past year, through the representation that we have through our trade office, through a visit by our trade and export minister, our exports to Japan are up 227%. We're seeing this in country after country after country. And it's giving us, providing us with additional market access, and it's providing us with trade resilience for the products that we are selling to those 163 countries.
That's an excerpt from Premier Scott Moe's speech on day one of the Food, Fuel, and Fertilizer Global Summit this morning in Regina. It's time now for the livestock market conditions and their presentation of Langenberg Motors.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for June closed at 176.97 today. That's up 30. August live cattle closed at 174.42, down 15. August feeder cattle closed at 252.87, down 187. September feeder cattle closed at 253.87, down 190. June lean hogs closed at 98.17, down 77. July lean hogs closed at 102.15, down 70. And that's the livestock market conditions. Spring rains fell in many parts of Saskatchewan last week. That was the first topic of discussion on Friday's SaskAgToday.com roundtable with Chief Agricultural Editor Kevin Hirsch.
That's just too wet to do anything, so retreated back to the Saskatoon office at least for a few days. My impression, though, is that the rainfall was widespread but highly variable. Talked to some producers around Riverhurst, Moose Jaw areas. I think they received a fairly good dose of rain, an inch and a quarter, inch and a half. Not nearly that where I farm down in southwest Saskatchewan, but again, highly variable, but very widespread. Certainly enough that it would have will have stopped seeding progress across the province.
He then offered his thoughts on the latest news concerning the proposed Bunge-Viterra merger.
My personal opinion is that I don't agree with some of the points raised by the Competition Bureau. I don't agree with some of the points raised by the farm groups, APAS, Sask Wheat, Sask Barley. I don't think it's as big a deal as far as reduction in competition, but that's just my personal opinion. And I still think that the two entities, Bunge and Viterra, will find a way to navigate this. This is just one of many countries that they need approval in, and indeed it may result in them having to sell some assets to make it right with the Competition Bureau. But I believe it is proceeding. And one of the things that could indeed be lost is a lot of head office jobs in Regina. Hard to see that being sustained. So that might be indeed one area where there will be a loss. But in my personal opinion, competition out in the countryside is not going to see much of a diminishment if the merger goes ahead.
Hirsch then commented on the false rumor that Farm Credit Canada's head office would be leaving Regina for Quebec.
I remember when FCC was actually headquartered in Ottawa and when it was moved to Regina. And if memory serves, Ralph Goodale played a key role in making that all happen. And way back when, it used to be called Fred Farm Credit Corporation, not Farm Credit Canada. But it hasn't always been in Regina, but it's been in Regina for a long, long time. Hard to imagine the loss of that head office. So glad that that was only a rumor.
He also talked about the potential strike action at CN and CPKC Rail come May 22nd.
Not surprising that the workers would give a strike mandate, that they would give that tool to their union leadership. So I don't think that's any surprise. The difficulty is that there doesn't seem to be much optimism anywhere that they will reach an agreement and that they will avoid a strike. The other thing is with the current government in Ottawa and the NDP saying that, that supports the government, saying they certainly won't support any back to work legislation, and this government's, Liberal government's, history of not being quick to enact back to work legislation, a strike at both railways starting May 22nd could go on for a significant length of time. And I think that's the worry that the entire grain industry has.
But Hirsch notes the timing of the possible strike isn't the worst case scenario.
Of all the time periods where you could have that sort of a disruption, it's not the worst time. The worst time would be right after harvest when grain movement is brisk. So, but anytime you have a disruption of that nature, you're disappointing customers, you're putting your reputation as a reliable supplier on the line, and it starts backing everything up. So it isn't the worst timing, but a strike of any length, and not only in grain, but in all of the other products that the railways move, would really cripple the Canadian economy. And it's certainly producers that were wanting to move grain at that time would be affected almost immediately.
He also commented on the generally poor rail service both CN and CPKC have provided so far this calendar year when it comes to hauling grain to port.
They certainly have had their challenges, and difficult to see just why, when we had, except for the one cold snap in January, which lasted a week or 10 days, relatively good winter weather, and they've still struggled to put good performance numbers together. But eventually they catch up and it does get moved. It wasn't a huge crop to move with the limited carryover. So we're not in a terrible position. There's not a huge number of ships waiting. But anytime there's a rail disruption, it's bad news. And this could be a major one with both railways affected. And the prospect of back-to-work legislation would take some time, I think, before the government came to that conclusion.
Hirsch then moved on to the grain and oilseed markets.
Yeah, we've heard some tremendous rainfall reports out of Brazil that are astounding. You know, some crops under a foot of water kind of thing. So that is having an effect in the marketplace for sure. It's good to see some upward movement, because we've had many weeks when the movement has not been upward and the news has not been good as we watch the grain markets.
He also commented on the fact that Manitoba issued its first crop report of the year last week, while Saskatchewan still hasn't done so.
Manitoba oftentimes can be ahead of Saskatchewan for seeding progress, just depending upon what the weather does. It would be nice to see the SAS crop report resume and put out some reports, but I imagine at this point it's still single digit, 1, 2, 3, 4% in total that has been seeded, so maybe not a lot to report, but always good to get those highlights and get a real good picture of where it's raining, where seeding is progressing. It's difficult to put that information together. We talk to various people and we can speculate about what's happening, but when you have a network of crop reporters like SaskAg does, that gives a far better picture of what exactly is happening in each region.
Hirsch then talked about the Canadian Food Inspection Agency finalizing guidance for gene-edited plants.
Well, immediately, it's not something that matters. It's not an immediate kind of thing, but it's an important development. Each country has to decide how they're going to handle gene editing. And some countries have suggested they're going to treat it like a GMO crop, like a genetically modified crop. And that is a very onerous procedure to try to get registration for any crop variety under that regime, including in Canada. Just takes many, many years and many tens or maybe more than that of millions of dollars to do it. CFIA has decided, and this last approval was for feed use. The feed use approval was the last to come. that gene-edited crops, where you're not adding new DNA or foreign DNA to the crop, you're just turning on or off some of the existing genes. The gene-edited crops will, in most cases, be treated just like regular plant breeding. And the regular plant breeding methods are not nearly so onerous to meet all of the safety requirements. So it's been a long time coming, but great to see Canada proceed this way. And that will mean technological developments with gene editing will be much more proficient and able to proceed in the Canadian marketplace.
He also touched on the need to be careful around power lines during spring seeding, after an advisory was issued by Sask Power.
Yeah, I've had some experience with that. A number of years ago, folding up my sprayer in the wrong place in the field, never even thought that the hydro lines could be anywhere near, and a big spark in the sky. Didn't do any harm, didn't cause a fire, didn't blow out the tires, but it sure was a stark reminder of being careful. And other things, you know, equipment being too close to a power pole, or with a roller or seeding equipment taking down a power pole, but also the height thing with augers, with sprayers, especially when they're folding up or unfolding. It's something fairly new in the last couple of years where Sask Power has monitored and put a number on the number of incidents, and it's a good reminder to everyone this time of year.
And Hirsch says you might not touch a line, but knocking down a power pole would be costly and dangerous.
Yeah, and some of the heavy equipment, like a land roller where a lot of the pulse crops are rolled, that's heavy enough that at, you know, 7 or 8 mile an hour, it would take down a power pole, I believe. And yeah, you come close to a few of them over time. You get pretty good over time, but you like to get as close as possible, but it's easy to overdo it.
Kevin Hirsch is the chief agricultural editor for SaskAgToday.com. Please stay tuned. Your commodities update will be coming up right after these messages.
Commodities update.
Canola futures closed up across the board today. July canola closed at $660.90, up $13.90. November canola closed at $675.40, up $14.60. July Minneapolis wheat closed at $725.50, up 11 cents. July Kansas City wheat closed at $675.25, up 25 cents. July Chicago wheat closed at $648.75. That's up 26.25 cents. July corn closed at $4.69 per bushel, up 8.75 cents. July soybeans closed at $12.48.75. That's down 33.75 cents. July oats closed at $3.97 per bushel, up 9.75 cents. And that's the commodities update. Please stay tuned. Sask Ag Today will return right after these messages.
Farm Bulletin Board.
Reaching New Heights. That's the title for this year's 111th Annual General Meeting for the Saskatchewan Stock Growers Association. It'll also be their convention in Swift Current. That'll be running June 9th through 11th. They do have a block of rooms reserved at the Home Inn and Suites in Swift Current. If you would like to check that out, you can go online to register. Go to the Saskatchewan Stock Growers Association website, which is www.skstockgrowers.com. So once again, that's the Stock Growers Annual General Meeting and Convention in Swift Current, coming up June 9th, 10th, and 11th. Some of the guest speakers will include nominations for the event will be for the AGM. There will be a total of 6 director-at-large positions open. The terms of the following directors are expiring: Che Anderson, Keith Day, Jerry DeLorme, Calvin Gaveline, Joe Gilchrist, Kelly Lightfoot, Miles McNeil, and Kelly Williamson. To be nominated for election and elected on the SSGA board as a director, the nominee has to be an individual, an active member in good standing, be an active livestock producer, at least 18 years of age, be a resident of Canada as defined in the Income Tax Act, not have the status of being bankrupt, and you must also be of sound mind. Nominations for any election of director shall be received by the Nomination Committee Chairman no later than 12:30 p.m. on Tuesday, June 6th. Each nominee will be required to complete the nomination and candidate declaration form and email the completed nomination forms to gm@skstockgrowers.com. Also, when it comes to resolutions, you can submit a resolution by 12:30 on June 11th to that same email. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. And that'll do it for SaskAg Today for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program.